Rita said. I think it stands to this day as the angriest I have ever seen him. He hollered from his office, Marguerite Chantal, you come fix this right now. You know, when you hear your full name, you're in deep shit. I almost peed my pants. He comes out with his hair on fire, standing over me and pointing at his office. You fix this right now. I'm grabbing Netska with both hands, bawling my eyes out because I don't recognize this yelling man as my father. Hands full, I run out of the living room and crash into my mother, and now she's pissed because... A pause. Because... We had certain rules in our house, Daisy said. It was a relaxed atmosphere, but good manners prevailed. Not just table manners or being polite to company. Certain little courtesies my parents insisted on, like thanking my mother for whatever she cooked. I don't think I ever got up from the table once without saying thank you. And whenever I left the room where my parents were, either parent, I said, excuse me. I didn't have to wait for their permission, I just had to say the words. I see. So I crashed into my mother, and she took me by the shoulders and kind of whirled me around to face my father again. She said, say excuse me before you turn your back on your father. And her voice was something I'd never heard before either. I said it, or sobbed it, and Pop pointed at the office like, get out of my sight, stupid child, go fix it. And I turned around again, and my mom caught my arm and smacked my butt. Wham! I don't need that kind of shit twice to learn a lesson. Rita laced her fingers around her knee, looked about to say something, but didn't. To this day, Daisy said, my father's study is not a room I find welcoming. My mom has a nice comfy chair by the window where she reads the paper, but I go in there and automatically tiptoe. Rita smiled. But look, it's one room in the house, not the entire house. It's knowing he's sensitive to certain things. Helicopter rotors make him tense up. Thunder makes him uneasy. If he goes to a crowded venue, he always searches for the exits, and screaming children stir some dark memory I'll never know. Daisy rolled her shoulders. He never took his demons out on me, ever. But I knew these things. They weren't hidden from me, and I grew up gravitating towards stillness rather than chaos. No big shock I turned out to be a homebody instead of a party girl. I wanted to help make Pop's life sweet and restful. I guess because I saw the kind of atmosphere my mother created so effortlessly, and I wanted to be part of it. You're quite fortunate. Your family and your home, whatever home it was in Philadelphia or at the orchard today, you're bonded to it. You have a deep sense of belonging, and what did Lucky say? It's a place you can go to and be safe, and your friends felt that way too, apparently. I love to bring them home, Daisy said, her voice a dreamy silk ribbon of memory. I loved when the porch light would go on and Mahmoud would appear at the door, waving as we fell out of the car. Hello, darlings, come in, come in. Staggering into the hallway, which smelled like lavender and lemon and whatever she was cooking, she'd kiss and hug and fuss over us, shoo us into the kitchen like we'd been pulled from a shipwreck, and within minutes, everyone would be her kid. She'd have someone setting the table and someone else fetching a platter or the gravy boat. We'd sit at the big table and eat and laugh and talk for hours. And I'd see my friends looking around the table, looking at each other like they'd never known anything like it. And I'd be so proud. It was my house, making them feel so good. Daisy touched her eyes, filled with unexpected emotion. Someday I want to be that woman, waving from the screen door as my children and their friends come to our house because it's safe and lovely and fun there, with wonderful things to eat. Across Three Generations. Daisy emerged from the library, taken aback as she heard the clock tower chime 9:30. She'd been holed up in a windowless study room, working on an art history project. Shut off from the outside light, the hours fell away. An unexpected cold front had come through Philadelphia, along with a mean rain. Without an umbrella, gloves, or a hat, the walk back to her dorm was brutal. The raw wind blew hard in her face, and she tucked her mouth under the collar of her jacket. Trudging, chin down, through the damp chill, she reached her dorm and put her hand on the side door's handle, just as it opened into her. It was Eric. He grabbed both her upper arms tight and turned in a quick half-circle so her back was against the bricks. He stared down at her, his breath making clouds in the cold night. His face wasn't angry, but it was hard, as were the hands squeezing her upper arms. "What's wrong?" she said, heart pounding against the wall of her chest.
"I didn't know where you were," he said.
Her mouth fell open, at a loss.
"I'm right here," she said, stupidly. "But I didn't know where you were," he said.
His mouth was partly open, too, working around words he couldn't find. She looked in his eyes, stunned and confused. Jealousy wasn't like him. He blinked back at her, looking far younger than his 19 years. Then she remembered what his mother had said, how a parent's greatest fear was not knowing where their child was, or not knowing where your father is, or not knowing where anyone you love is. It hit her all at once, how for some people, the not knowing was a mere nuisance. For others, it was a dire strait. Daisy closed her eyes as understanding flooded her. This wasn't resentment of how she spent her time or who she spent it with. It was her whereabouts, the fixed constant of her place in his universe. The knowing was dire for Eric, this boy who was abandoned overnight.
"I'm sorry," she said, opening her eyes.
"I'm so sorry. It was thoughtless of me. I should have let you know." His fingers let up and his shoulders dropped. He swallowed, looking away.
"It's fine," he said. "It's fine. It's just that..."
"It's not fine." She put her hands on his face. "You need to know where I am. I didn't understand until now. I'm sorry." Some deep, fear-based emotion had coiled around him like a snake. His eyes blinked rapidly in the cold. He wasn't crying, but he was held up tight in a vice.
He was 8, Daisy thought,
her cold hands running gentle along his shoulders and arms. His father was there one night and gone the next morning.
"I'm sorry," she said. "I won't disappear like that again."
He put his arms around her, pulled her tight to his body.
"You're freezing," he said. "Come on, get inside."
He loved her hard that night.
"Turn over,"
he said softly, digging a hand beneath her shoulder blade and rolling her on her stomach. He knelt across her legs and worked himself inside her, his palms warm on the small of her back, his hungry body a sweet, crushing weight, pinning her to the mattress, fixing her in place.
"I want you all the time,"
his mouth whispered along the nape of her neck. His teeth touched her skin.
"I want you right under me."
Finding the hook of an orgasm while Eric was inside and getting it to stay with her was more chance than skill. Often it slipped from her grasp or danced just out of reach. Now something within her shifted and sank deeper. It put down roots in the cradle of her pelvic bones and started squeezing a hand into a soft fist. Beneath the pillow, her fingers wove tight with Eric's.
"Don't stop," she said.
"It's so close."
"I can feel you," he said. "Let it go."
It was on her, rising up as Eric pressed her down. He slid into her faster, deeper. The Christmas light swam in her eyes, a twinkling blur cascading through her chest and belly and head as he pushed her harder, threaded her through the needle, and pulled her out long on the other side.
"Come," he said, his voice collapsing. "Come to me."
Their fingers clenched. She reared back into him, kicked up her hips, and came in pieces. Her teeth rattled together. All the air pulled back through her throat, leaving nothing but a thin cord of sound wrapped around the shape of his name.
"God,"
he said, gasping against her head.
"Oh, it's so good."
She lay trembling beneath him, closed up in his arms, his heart thumping on her back, her own heart like timpani beneath her ribs. His mouth soft in the tangle of her hair, little nonsense noises as their bodies and their breathing quieted down. Together they floated in the dozing zone of contentment where time had no place. Her body shivered awake.
"Are you cold?"
he whispered.
"A little."
He reached out of bed, got his flannel shirt, and buttoned her into it. He loved when she wore his clothes.
"I want to show you something,"
he said. He leaned down again, hooking the straps of his backpack and dragging it toward him. From inside, he drew out a book, handing it back over his shoulder. Daisy clicked on the reading lamp and tried to read the title, but it wasn't in English.
They're folktales, he said. My grandparents gave it to me for Christmas one year. It's all in Swedish. I can't read it. I just like the pictures. But I really wanted to show you these. From between the middle pages, he drew out several photographs and passed them to her. Daisy folded her pillow in half to make a wedge and leaned back, examining the pictures. The first was a man and a little boy at the edge of a dock, fishing. The boy wore a pair of plaid shorts and nothing else. The fishing pole was curved in an arc toward the water, and the boy was pulling back on it, eyes wide and mouth in a little O of surprise. The man stood behind, bending forward a little, his hands on the boy's forearms, his face wide open with laughing excitement. His hair was blonde and cut short, lean arms and broad shoulders in a white t-shirt. Around his neck swung a gold chain. "Is this your father?" Daisy asked. "That's him, and that's me." "I guessed," she said, smiling. "What did you catch?"
"Probably a bass, or a pike."
She put the picture face down on her chest. The next showed Byron Fiskara walking along a rocky beach. He held Peter in one arm. The other hand was palm up, showing something within it to Eric. The wind blew pant legs and jackets into folds and ripples. The surface of the water behind them was full of whitecaps. A faint smile touched Byron's face as he looked down at Eric. "Where was this taken?"
"Clayton. It's on the St. Lawrence River, the Thousand Islands."
"You lived there?"
"I was born there."
The next picture was in a kitchen. Eric, looking no more than 5, sat on his father's lap, a big, closed-eyed, closed-mouthed smile mugging into the camera. A fork in one hand, a piece of cake on the plate in front of him. Byron had both arms curved around Eric's middle, his chin on his son's shoulder, looking hopeful for a bite of dessert. Across the table, Peter sat in a high chair, his face smeared with chocolate frosting, his mouth open like a hungry baby bird, leaning toward the fork a woman was holding out to him. Daisy peered. It wasn't Christine sitting next to Peter. This woman was older, slim in a print dress, gray hair pulled into a low bun, horn-rimmed glasses, not smiling, but not unfriendly. "Who's she?" she asked.
"That's far more," he said. "My grandmother."
"Did you live with her?"
"Next door."
"And what did you call her?"
"Farmor," he said. "Swedes have different names for grandparents. Farmor is your father's mother."
He reached and turned the next and last picture up. Byron, an older man, busy at a workbench, and Eric sitting on its surface. He drove a matchbox car up his father's arm, and Byron's head was turned back, smiling at him.
"That's Farfar,"
Eric said, fingertip tapping the old man.
"My father's father."
"Your dad looks like you here,"
Daisy said, her own fingertip circling Byron's face.
"And even in your grandfather, I can see the resemblance." It was in the cheekbones and the shape of the mouth, and how all their hair was fair and cut short, showing a similar brow across 3 generations.
"Pete has more of my mom's side in him," Eric said. "Everyone said I was all Fiskara."
She hummed, rubbing her head against his. "But your grandfather's face, the way it's closed, he has a reserve. That's Pete's expression. Your dad's face is a little more open, like yours." Her fingers flipped through the pictures once more. In each one, Byron was wearing the necklace. In each one, he was looking at Eric. She didn't know what to say. Every observation felt potentially hurtful. "He looks like a nice man."
"Nice men didn't abandon their families."
"He loved you. You can tell by his face when he looks at you."
"Then why did he leave?"
She tapped the edges of the photograph into line and gave the stack back to Eric. He put them and the book on her night table and clicked the lamp off, leaving them in the light of the Christmas garlands. He rolled away from her.
"Lie against my back."
She moved up to him, curving herself around his body. She slid her hand up to rest flat on his bare chest, feeling his heart. He loved to be held this way when he was drifting off, and she loved the broad plane of his back against her stomach, holding on to him like a raft through waves of sleep. It worked perfectly. They made so much sense together. "When did you move away from Clayton?" she asked.
"About a year after he left. My mom wanted to be closer to her family in Rochester and have Pete go to school there.
He'd stop talking, I told you.
Did you ever go back? To visit your grandparents?
Few times. But it got harder and harder. I remember those visits being sad and almost awkward. I moped through them. Everything I used to love about that place I hated. I didn't want to see my old house where we were a family.
Didn't want to see my bedroom window where I watched his truck drive away for the last time.
Didn't want the river where I fished with him or Farfar's boathouse where I'd play by the workbench. Just didn't want any of it anymore. It hurt too much. My mom would be so tense back in Clayton, and my grandparents were getting older and more reserved. It wasn't a loving place anymore. As Pete and I got older and more busy with sports and stuff, the visits dwindled away. When Farfar died my junior year, I hadn't seen him in, I can't remember how long, long enough that when we got the letter from his lawyer saying he'd left me and Pete his money, I felt bad. Like I could have tried harder to make a relationship. A few months later, his brother Emil died. He was the last of that generation. It finally hit me with my father gone. I was the next link in the chain, and that's when I took the necklace out of my dresser and started wearing it. He sighed. She rubbed her forehead between his shoulder blades, breathed in his scent. You know, I never showed those pictures to anyone, he said. I loved seeing them, she said. I feel like I can tell you anything. She rested her lips behind his ear. Because you can.
I'm so in love with you.
Her eyes grew warm, and she felt her heart would burst.
I'm so happy, she said.
His fingers curled around hers. Then he was still. Emotion cradled her in soft arms as she lay awake, listening to him sleep, running a gentle fingertip along the gold chain at his neck. After that night, she always let him know. Called or left a note, left word with someone else, and few were the moments when one of them didn't know where the other was. Hibernation. The room went utterly quiet. The sound of no sound pressing against Daisy's eardrums. Her heart beat slow, as if she were in hibernation. When he'd tell me about his father, she said, I'd feel so close to him. When someone shares the happy stories of their life, it's always beautiful. But when someone shares their pain with you, it's almost more profound, more valuable.
I agree, Rita said.
God, I loved him. It felt grown up, but we were really just kids. Yet it sounds like you had quite a mature relationship, Rita said. To hear you tell it, you and Eric were lovers and partners. You worked through problems together. You were attuned to each other's wants and needs. He trusted you implicitly, and I blew it, Daisy said.
Come back. Please come back.
Rita hummed, a soft note of attentive sympathy. I own what I did, Daisy said. But at the same time, I wish to hell James had never come to Lancaster. She ran her hand along her damp eyes. I get so tired, and it's easier to blame him. If only he hadn't showed up, everything would be different. Soundlessly, Rita turned a page in her notebook. When did James come? Junior year? Can you tell me about him? A broken little brother. Both arms. Marie's advanced partnering class was learning the balcony scene from Kenneth MacMillan's ballet, Romeo and Juliet. The partnering was difficult, the lifts complex. Timing was critical, and if Romeo wasn't where Juliet needed him to be, stars would not only cross, but they would also end up on the floor.
Sorry,
James said, helping Daisy up.
That was my fault.
It was his fault. But one of the first things a girl learned going into supported adagio class was how to fall safely. The second was patience. Daisy fell plenty when learning to partner with Will. She had to keep it in mind as she was learning with James. She brushed off her hip and butt, pushing away her irritation.
You all right?
James said, his apologetic gray eyes like storm-filled skies, threaded with lightning bolts of gold. He transferred to the conservatory from Juilliard and already made an impression as a brilliant but erratic dancer. His range was phenomenal, He could shift effortlessly from classical ballet to edgy modern to ballroom schmaltz, and he was a credible tap dancer as well. Plus, he had a kinesthetic memory. He merely had to watch movement to copy it. He recalled choreography and style after a single demonstration. What he couldn't seem to retain, however, was consistency. They started learning this pas de deux 2 weeks ago. The lifts worked fine. Then, for no reason, James blanked out on simple mechanics. In the next class, he had them down again. Today, it was a disaster. Tomorrow, they might be perfect. Daisy had no way of knowing. His erratic nature made her nervous and cerebral, and when she got too caught up in her head, her dancing went flat. It drove Marie batshit. "For the 40th time, Jace." Marie hadn't gotten his name right yet. "You are trying to catch her with one arm." Marie's voice was quiet, but it dripped intolerance. "You are going to either break your arm or break Daisy." Her tone left no question which she would prefer. "Mark the lift, please. Walk through it, Daisy. Are you listening, Jace? Let her take your hand as she goes up. Let her let go of you during the throw. She will turn herself in the air, and when the turn is complete, you catch. Both arms. Tight. You love her, for goodness sake." James nodded, hands on hips, expression contrite. As she walked to her starting position, Daisy smiled at him and touched his damp shoulder. If Marie was intent on James partnering her, she had to find a way to connect with him, especially since Will was graduating this year. If she were dancing with Will right now, her head would be filled with a Capulet and Montague narrative. She and Will would have read the balcony scene together, acted it out and built a backstory, murmured the dialogue as they practiced steps. James barely looked at her. She may as well have been playing the nurse. Marie cued them. "And?" Daisy wiped the slate clean, ran and took James's hand as he threw her. He was strong, and the momentum let her turn over easily in the air. She should have been turning because she longed for his arms, because it was too lonely in the air, and down on the earth with Romeo was where she belonged. But with the imaginationless James under her, her mind only knew one entreaty. "Please, God, catch me." He did, with both arms.
"Bravo, Jace," Marie said. "Now do it that way every time, see?"
"See,"
he said, setting Daisy down. She turned to him, but he wasn't looking at her. His hands were on his hips again, and his gaze was intent. Within the goatee he sported, his mouth curved in a slightly predatory smile. He was looking across the studio to Will, who was looking back. Class was dismissed. Daisy plopped down by her dance bag and untied her shoe ribbons, covertly watching James. He wore his dark brown hair cropped short. The goatee and the gold rings in both ears gave him a gypsy air. He stood by Will, arms crossed, with that intense gaze as Will dried himself off with a towel. Grinning, Will chucked the towel at James's face, who pulled it off with relish. Will dragged his wet t-shirt over his head and tossed it at James as well.
"Keep going," James said.
Will laughed, shaking out a clean, dry shirt and, Daisy noticed, taking his sweet time, putting it on. It wasn't a point for debate. At 22, Will was a hunk, all boyish grin and chewy sex appeal, his skin flushed with sweat and exercise, the veins pushed up high in his muscles. His tattoos curled black, gray, and green in the contours and cuts. Daisy knew them all. The Chinese characters, the compass rose, the yin-yang symbol, and all the rest of them. Or at least the ones on his torso. The ones below the belt she'd only heard Lucky describe in dreamy tones. You know the iliac line really fit guys have? Will's got some Zen quotation running right along it. Fucking hot, it's my favorite. Lucky wasn't at school this semester. She was up in Boston doing an emergency medicine course. Daisy didn't know if any kind of separation agreement was put in place while she was gone, but she knew Will, and she'd been detecting a shift in his demeanor lately. A curious wind turning his interior vein in the opposite direction. Daisy watched him laugh as James peppered him with friendly punches, and she grasped the situation unfolding in front of her. James couldn't speak French,
but he spoke dance and men, two of Will's languages. He was fit and built and definitely easy on the eyes. His tattoos had their own story. He liked Will, and Will was digging the shit out of it. As September slipped by and James's presence became more frequent in Daisy's circle, she was positive Will was looking for some fun. A smug strut accompanied his presence, as if the confirmation he was attractive to both sexes had gone to his head. He was partying hard on the weekends, which was where Eric had to either disengage or throw everything off and dig in. It wasn't his strong suit. James, Will, and David had the heads and stomachs for boozing. Eric tried to keep up, but usually ended up paying a hefty price. His hangovers were the stuff of embarrassing legend, and it wasn't only booze on the menu. David always had cocaine, and James smoked more pot than Leo Graham. Both Daisy and Eric declined the blow. They were curious about the high, but shared the same aversion to putting anything up their nose. They took the joints passed to them, but smoked in a methodical way, enough to get the edges of the world to giggle, but not enough to make their DNA disintegrate. But it wasn't only substance intolerance bothering Eric. Other lines in Will's life, invisible up until now, were becoming obvious and testing Eric's social tolerance. "It's not like there's never been speculation about Will batting both sides," Daisy said. "Well, it's one thing to speculate, another thing to see it in action," Eric said. A perpetual wrinkle of worry seemed to be in between his eyebrows. He was morally and emotionally cornered in his masculinity. He respected Will's private business and had always chosen to deal with things he found personally objectionable by shutting the hell up. To butt in and say something was either to admit he had objections to Will's relationship with James, or, more truthfully, that he was jealous.
"I'm jealous of James," he laughed as he said it, but the admission was raw. "It's fucked up."
"Because he's getting all Will's attention," she said.
"What the fuck do I care who Will pays attention to?"
"He's your friend."
"David's my friend, and I couldn't care less who he sleeps with."
"One, David is not Will. Two, I'm not a psychology major or anything, but I think you might have a small problem with people's attention being taken away from you suddenly and without explanation. Particularly people you care about. Possibly male people you care about. But that might be too Freudian a stretch." Eric looked at her, a long time, lips parted as if to deny. Then his eyes rolled to the ceiling, and he ran a hand through his hair.
"Stop knowing me," he said.
"I'll try," she said, putting arms around him.
"So what do I say to Will? Dude, I'm having serious daddy issues. Could you maybe take me out to dinner or something?"
"He'd love that," she said, laughing.
"Maybe I'll stand under his window and sing You Don't Bring Me Flowers."
"Come on, in all seriousness, all you really need to tell him is that you want to hang out more. Alone."
"Sounds so gay,"
he muttered, bristling like a cactus in her arms. She let him go. "Tell him. Have a conversation. It's because you respect his private and personal life that Will talk to you about damn near anything." This she knew. She'd never directly asked Will about his sexual persuasions. As tantalizing and fascinating as she found the notion of him having male lovers, it was none of her business. But she'd had plenty of conversations about tolerance with her partner, and he'd made clear his philosophy about discourse.
"I'll talk about anything," he said. "Just don't be an asshole about it."
As a person who welcomed and honored love in all its forms without regard for gender, Will could not be fazed or shamed. He had nothing to hide, which made him completely open to discussion and debate as long as it was done with a decent amount of civility.
"You want to sit and ask me stuff? Bring it. You want to ask if I ever sucked a guy off or taken it up the ass because you're genuinely curious? Go right ahead. We'll have a conversation. But don't try to corner me or confront me. Don't ask me shit with a sneer on your face, thinking you can shame me into some sordid confession just to make yourself feel better about your own doubts or insecurities. I don't have time."
Daisy was willing to bet the civilized questions turning over in Eric's mind contained the words suck, take, and ass. But as for whether or not Eric would ever ask them, she'd keep her money in her pocket. The bus. How are you, darling girl? Daisy said, switching the phone to her other ear. I miss you.
Do you? Lucky said, laughing. I thought Eric would be moved in by now.
Daisy and the boys had started renting off campus that fall. They had the luck to find two apartments on adjacent streets, the backyards bumping together, and David shared an apartment with Neil Martinez around the corner.
Oh, being the single occupant has its perks, Daisy said.
But I miss you. How's the course going?
Tougher than I thought.
A sigh was in Lucky's voice.
I'll stick it out, but I don't know if I have the stomach for this. The actual coursework is interesting, but going out in the bus is pretty brutal.
Bus?
The ambulance. We call it the bus.
Ah. No lack of hot firefighters, however. As you said, it has its perks.
Daisy laughed, and a slight pause flowed over the line.
Lucky said slowly.
I had a date.
Really? So you and Will made an agreement?
Yeah.
The word was thrown out cavalierly, but Daisy could sense a thin veil of uncertainty around it.
I mean, it seemed a natural and sort of sensible time to
see what's out there, Daisy said.
Sort of.
We agreed we weren't going to actively go out looking to get laid, but we didn't swear an oath of absolute social fidelity either.
An experimental emotional separation while you're physically apart. See what happens, see how you feel.
Right.
And?
Lucky sighed. I've been on a few dates, actually, and every guy is... He's nice, he's funny, he's intelligent. We get along, he's good looking. But at the end of the day, he's just not Will.
I know he's having a good time.
Daisy spoke carefully, knowing Lucky was no fool.
I get the sense he's stretching his wings.
He keeps talking about this James guy. What's he like?
He's a great dancer, but personally, I find him unpredictable. He's an attention junkie, the kind with a deep streak of damage somewhere inside, like it's never enough. When he's in a good mood, he's king of the world, but when he's not, it's one passive-aggressive ploy after another to get someone to look at him.
Sounds like he likes Will looking at him.
Daisy tapped her teeth together, thinking.
How do you feel about that?
It's not like I had no idea. Straight with a slight bend, right?
Do you know that for a fact? I'm not digging for dirt, just curious.
So is he. Curious, I mean.
That's how he explains it to me. He loves women. His long-term emotional relationships have always been with women. But he has this physical curiosity toward men, and he's never been afraid to pursue it. Nothing ever crossed the line and turned into love, though. He said he doesn't love men. Except Eric.
The line gets a little blurry there.
Daisy laughed.
Really? Since when?
I don't know. Lately, the line has a line. You know Will, nothing is off limits and he's incapable of being flustered. But sometimes if I tease or dig too hard about Eric, he'll actually blush and clam right up.
Stop! Hand to God, super delicate subject, so please not a word about it to Fish.
Daisy drew two lines across her heart.
Entre nous.
Good girl. All right, I have to hit the books. I'm lonely and I miss you like crazy. I miss all of you, even David.
We miss you too. Come home soon.
Leave the light on. Turning all the cheeks.
How did you feel about Will's relationship with James?
Curious, Daisy said. Kind of turned on, if you want to be blunt about it. I kept hoping I'd see them, I don't know, at least kiss or something.
She laughed as a bit of heated color swept across her face.
Come on, they were two hot, tattooed guys with amazing bodies. I'll just watch a little.
What about Eric?
He had no interest in watching.
Rita smiled.
But he and Will live together. How did he handle it?
Funny thing about Eric. When he wasn't entirely sure what the hell was going on, he was a moody, brooding bundle of angst.
And then one night, we were at my place and we ran out of condoms, so he got dressed and went back over to his place to get some. He walked in on Will and James.
Not in flagrante on the living room floor, but he found a trail of clothes going up the stairs, and when he opened his bedside table drawer, all his condoms were gone. Then Will came into the hallway wearing only a towel, and it was out in the open. Eric went chill. He could finally organize everyone into their places in the universe and figure out how to make it work in his head. Will is Will. I am me. And live and let live. Lucky was away, so Eric moved his stuff over to my place. He called it turning all the cheeks. Rita turned a page in her notebook. But in time, the relationship between James and Will became tenuous. Daisy nodded. In the beginning, it was euphoric. That fall, Will was choreographing a ballet to Philip Glass's soundtrack to Paparazzi. James became Will's unofficial assistant, and he was brilliant at it. So they were collaborative lovers, and Will depended on him. At the same time, Will warned him things had an expiration date. When Lucky came back, it was going to be over, no discussion. James supposedly said he was fine with it. But when Lucky came back second semester, James evidently was not fine with it. Did Lucky know? Rita asked. About the affair with James? Will told her. I think he suspected James might be the type to use emotional blackmail. Also, both Will and Lucky hated secrets. They preferred the bald truth, even if it was brutal. So he told her. Lucky was upset, but she told me it was more for Will's choice of partner rather than the actual infidelity. James was clearly unstable. She crossed her arms. It's clear now. God, Rita, I can look back and see what a giant emotional tinderbox it was. But I mean, who the hell thinks it will drive a person to murder? Maybe on TV or in the movies, not in real life. Not in your school, not in the middle of rehearsal. Was there even an inkling? Any violent altercation between Will and James? Will realized he made a mistake keeping James as his assistant while he was expanding Paparazzi for the spring concert. James was being passive-aggressively impossible, which drove Will crazy. Like I said, Will had no patience for those tactics. His philosophy was always, if you have something to say, say it. Let's have a conversation. And he finally had to ban James from his rehearsals. Then the tension started to spill over and ripple through the rest of us. Daisy smiled, but it felt tight around her eyes. It was a little house, she said, running her fingers along her jaw. The walls were thin, and the four of us were comfortable with each other. We heard each other argue, and we heard each other make love. We shared the bathroom and passed half-dressed in the hallway at night. So the situation was in a fishbowl. It was our problem, not just Will's. How did it become your problem? Because I still had to dance with James. He was upset and erratic, which made me crazy when we partnered. So Eric was on edge because I'd come home from rehearsal stressed out and distracted. She unscrewed the cap from her water and took a long sip. I was actually looking forward to the concert being over, which sucked because it was Will's last one and I should have been savoring it, enjoying it. I was dancing in such a great ballet, too. Marie got the rights to stage George Balanchine's Who Cares? It's set to music by George Gershwin. Jazzy and stylistic and romantic and tough. Balanchine's choreography is really hard. And you were dancing with James? We had a pas de deux set to The Man I Love, but it wasn't going well. I had no connection with the guy at all, and after Will banned him from coming to Paparazzi rehearsals, I felt like I had to do something to make him feel someone was on his side. Water in the desert. Here, Daisy said, setting a cup of coffee in front of James. His hands curled around it.
Thanks.
He took a sip, then shook out a cigarette each and lit them. Daisy was quiet for a few moments, letting James get used to her companionship and her compassion. Their relationship so far had been confined to the studio and incidental occasions at her apartment. She couldn't launch into an intense share and trust exercise. It had no context.
I don't know what to do, James finally said.
I'm sorry, she said. I wish I could help.
You don't think you could talk to him?
His voice trailed off along with the impossible request.
Daisy made the shake of her head slow and gentle. Best thing to do is back off. We have a concert in 6 weeks, and frankly, you're making me nervous. She touched his wrist and met his eyes, giving him a taste of her concern.
I know,
he said, running a hand back over his head.
I'm sorry, I'll get it together. I just hurt so damn much.
Tears filled his eyes, and the wrist under Daisy's fingertips rolled. The pink of his palm up on the table, vulnerable and empty. Daisy put hers on top of it. It would do no good to tell him what he already knew and beat him over the head with platitudes or told you so.
I feel like an idiot because he told me,
James said.
He told me, and I didn't. I went and fell in love anyway. It wasn't just the sex, Daisy. It was the collaborating, that creative bond. Jesus, it was amazing, and it made me feel like I really thought we had something. I thought something more was there, something that would make him think twice or make it not so easy when she came back. But it's like he flipped a switch, like none of it happened. I feel so fucking stupid. I feel used and thrown away, which is the story of my goddamn life.
His face dissolved.
I love him, Daisy.
He brought his hand up to hide it, keeping the other around Daisy's. She stroked his fingers and let him be. The campus center was largely deserted. They were tucked into one of the rear booths, with no one around to disturb or pry.
What's it feel like?
He asked. What? She let go his hand to rummage in her dance bag for some tissues.
To always be happy? Thanks.
He blew his nose.
I'm not always happy. You're such a positive person. Nothing bothers you. Nothing upsets you. Everything comes so easily, and you and Fish are in love like nothing I've ever seen. You've got like this charmed life. Do you even know it?
Her life, charmed or not, wasn't the issue. Daisy decided it was time for some firmness. I'll tell you what I do know, she said. I know you love him, and I know you're hurting. But sulking around when your work needs to be done isn't attractive. Being confrontational, dramatic, and needy isn't attractive. Lucky's my roommate. Will's one of my best friends. I'm not going to insult your intelligence by acting like you don't know where my allegiance lies. That said, I'll tell you one thing you have that Will doesn't.
What?
She sat back and crossed her arms. Me. James's eyebrows drew down in confusion. He looked at her. She looked back, letting him think it over. And slowly his forehead smoothed out and she saw it sink in.
I don't have the man I love, he said. But I have the man I love.
She nodded. And I won't further insult your intelligence by acting like I don't miss him, that not being partnered with him for who cares isn't disappointing. A little life was coming into James's eyes. You know the expression, looking good is the best revenge? She said.
A smile began to stretch out the corners of his mouth.
He'll have more respect for you if you get your dancing into shape. You have more chance for some kind of relationship with him if you get your shit together. You're perfectly capable of dancing the man I love well. As good as, if not better than him. And I'll help you. Because if it looks like I get everything I want, it's because I work my ass off for it. Now what are you going to do? Die or dance? He inhaled, exhaled, tilted his head and looked at her as if truly seeing her for the first time.
Your eyes are so pretty,
he said. She smiled at the irrelevance, but said nothing, only held his gaze, holding the flame she'd coaxed alight.
Marguerite, he said. That's your real name, right?
Yes.
Funny. My sister's name was Margaret. I suppose Fish told you about her.
Daisy nodded. She knew Margaret was the buffer between James and the homophobic verbal abuse of his father and brothers, the comfort for the alcoholic neglect of his mother. She was his champion. She was also a soldier. She was deployed to Saudi Arabia and died in a Scud missile attack on the army barracks. Daisy took her own deep breath and took a small risk. What touched me most about her? She said. It's just a little thing that stuck in my head. How she was in a water purification unit.
What of it?
She died bringing people water in the desert. I don't know what I'm exactly saying, but it stayed with me, like the opening line to a story. She died bringing water to the desert.
I'm a desert,
James said.
Something in me dried up when she got killed. She was blown to pieces. Only things the army could send home were her guns and her dog tags.
I'm so sorry. He crushed the paper cup in his hand and attempted a weak smile.
You got brothers? Sisters?
I have a half-brother, Daisy said. My father's son from a previous relationship, but I've never met him. Maybe someday he'll come. She stared over James's shoulder, an idea taking shape in her mind. Someday he'll come along. The music for The Man I Love swelled in her head. Her feet shuffled on the ground, marking choreography. Let's go find a studio, she said.
Why?
I have an idea. Come on.
I don't have my bag.
Doesn't matter. She stood up. Come on, James. Trust me. For an hour. They found some empty space, in their street clothes and socks, with their rehearsal tape on a boombox. Let's not dance this romantically, Daisy said. Let's do it as siblings. James's expression became interested.
Lost siblings,
he said, nodding.
Like separated twins.
You be the desert. I'll be water. It took time, but as they marched through the steps, a current began to crackle. James started to look her in the eye. Instead of gazing back with longing, she made a face at him, trying to get him in trouble at the dinner table. He laughed and gave her a shove. Sometimes his eyes went distant. What are you thinking? Daisy asked. His mouth opened and closed around a wistful smile and a little chuckle in his chest.
I dared her to eat a stick of butter once.
Did she?
Yeah, and spent about 8 hours trying not to puke. I told her to get it over with. She'd feel better if she threw up, but she wouldn't. She was tough.
So are you, Daisy said. He looked down at her.
Case Giusti said something when he found out you and I were partnered for the concert. He said, you'll like dancing with Daisy. She's generous. I really had no idea what he meant. I do now.
Now I'm about to puke, she said. Shut up and dance. Your own laws of gravity. They worked hard, long hours of sweat and practice, finding a common thread to sew together the choreography of The Man I Love and make it their own. Daisy pushed James to imagine, to narrate his memories of Margaret out loud as they danced. In return, she listened to his advice and deferred to him on certain partnering decisions. What do you think? She asked. Or, what am I doing wrong here? His talent was immense. She got him to trust it again. She started to trust him. In the middle of the piece, she did a whirling chain of turns upstage to where James was waiting, the last one tilting off balance to fall back into his arms. James waited for her to reach him with his hands behind his back. It was a schoolboy stance, but a teasing grin lifted a corner of his mouth, a hint of a dare in his eye. They weren't dancing. They were playing chicken. Daisy spotted his face to keep her trajectory straight, whipping her head around with each revolution to focus back on him. As she turned faster, she pulled his expression into her, letting fear spiral off her like the contents of a centrifuge. She let her vision blur as she fell back, laughing out loud when James's arms seized her at the last second.
Gave me a heart attack that time,
she said, upside down.
Wimp.
James brought her up into an arabesque, turning her in a tight circle round and round. If it were Will, she would wind her arms about his shoulders and lay her head down in romantic surrender. With James, she kept her chin up and her eyes locked on his and gave him a playful swat on the jaw before she moved into the next phrase.
This feels good,
James said when they took a break.
I never dug into the story behind a pas de deux this way. Even if no one else gets it, it's cool.
I think they will.
He paused. My sister would have liked this.
Did she come see you dance?
You kidding? She was the only one who came.
As they headed into the first studio run-through of Who Cares, Daisy prayed the connection would hold. She was eager for their work to be seen. Up until now, everyone had been learning and rehearsing their solos and duets in private. Now the company gathered and opened the folding partition between studios A and B, making a double-wide performance space the size of the theater. Anticipation and excitement hung in the air, a keen interest to see the ballet as a whole. Daisy sat under the bars, James on one side, and a sophomore boy named John Quillis on the other. "You feel good?" she asked James. He nodded without looking at her or smiling. His gaze was across the floor to Will, who was sitting under the opposite bars with Taylor Revelle. A faint sense of unease coiled in Daisy's stomach. She pushed it away and rubbed a few circles between James's shoulder blades. A suspicious herbal fragrance lurked in his t-shirt. She pushed that away as well. In the center of the studio floor, Manuel Sabena was deep in his solo to Biden My Time. A gymnast before he embraced ballet, he had a jump which defied physics. He hung in the air, gobbling up the space in turning leaps, bringing whoops and catcalls from the observers. "Must be nice to write your own laws of gravity," John said. John looked exactly like a young Ron Howard, and the conservatory had baptized him Opie. "Don't fucking call me Opie," was his perpetual mumbled lament, which only seared the nickname's brand deeper. Daisy liked him. To safeguard against James's unpredictability, she'd discreetly taught James's roles to John all this year, just to have backup.
"I'm impressed with Opie," Will said once. "He's like a vein of raw talent nobody's mined yet. He'll make a nice prince someday, so handle him carefully. Make him feel like more than a convenient understudy, but don't kiss his ass. He's shy and he's crushy on you, but he's not stupid."
The endorsement did a lot for John. He was in the thick of his sophomore transition year and hungry for opportunity. He was also one of a handful of straight boys in the conservatory, trying to juggle the passion for his art against his still-developing male ego. As such, he shadowed Will, not only in class but to the gym, building up both his confidence and his muscles. With a bit of startle, Daisy noticed a subtle change in John's appearance. He'd been growing his copper hair out and experimenting with a more messy, tousled look. A couple days of beard growth gave him an adult air. Even at rest, she could see new mass and definition in his arms and chest, products of working out with Will. As he talked to her, he didn't blush as much. Together, they watched Will and Taylor's duet to Embraceable You. It was sweet. Not much else. Taylor's technique was impeccable, but strangely soulless. Will's personality seemed too much for her. She kept pushing her chin out against it. If he tried too hard, he'd come across as lecherous, so he simply smiled and partnered her. Applause was polite at the end of the piece. Will sat back down under the bars, his face unreadable.
"Hold right," Marie called. "Where is the man I love?"
Daisy got up and reached a hand to James. His palm was sweaty in hers. As his head reached her level, she saw his eyes were bloodshot.
Jesus, is he stoned?
The idea reviled her. It was akin to spitting on the altar in a church or some other desecration of religious property. The studio was sacred space and rehearsal was mass. James wouldn't dare. He simply wouldn't dare. Within 30 seconds of music, she knew she didn't have his attention. The connection was dead and the pas de deux had gone flat. Flatter than Taylor and Will's. All the sibling playfulness, the backstory, everything she was so excited to reveal today, gone. It took every bit of professionalism she owned to tamp down her anger, make it sit on a chair in the corner, and shut the hell up until she finished. They reached the section she dreaded most, a run to James and a turning leap backward into his arms. She had to jump and rotate blind and trust he'd be there. Mid-run, she had a premonition it wasn't going to work. Too late, she realized James wasn't even looking at her, much less prepared to catch her. Then she was in the air and turning.
"He's not here."
"Jesus, James!" John yelled. "Dude!" Will cried.
She shot right past him. Her hands instinctively went for the floor. Always help take the fall with your palms and then roll and aim for something cushy, preferably your ass. You couldn't break your ass.
but momentum was carrying her backward and she couldn't get her hands down in time. All her weight collapsed on her left ankle, which rolled under with a sickening wrench. Crying out, she toppled full onto her left hand and felt a snap in her pinky. Then she was down. Everyone else was up.
"What the hell is wrong with you?"
Will yelled, taking James by the back of the shirt and flinging him into the bars, which rattled in their brackets.
"Are you out of your fucking mind?"
"Will, no," Marie said. "Stop it. Jason, you get out of my sight. Get out of this studio. Will, stop. That's enough. Basta."
"That's it," Daisy thought, as tears flooded her eyes. Not from pain. She was numb to the throb in her foot and hand. The agony came from the concert flashing before her, the curtain coming down on a stage she wasn't on. She fell. She was out. She was done.
"Margarita."
Marie sank to her knees, pressing cold hands to Daisy's shoulders.
"Where are you hurt? Did you hit your head?"
"No, I'm all right," Daisy said, gasping and trying to sit up. Marie wouldn't let her until she turned her head, moved arms and legs, and wiggled the uninjured fingers and toes. Will helped her up, his hands shaking.
"Give her some room, darlings," Marie said. "Let her breathe."
"It's my foot," Daisy said, wiping her face on Will's sleeve.
"Ankle's swelling already,"
John said, crouched by her feet, a soothing palm on her shin.
"Non te la prendere, cara."
Marie's hand was firm around Daisy's.
"Let's get her to the training room."
"Come here, honey," Will said, scooping careful arms under her back and knees. He stood up, Daisy crushed to his chest.
"I got you."
"I think my finger's broken," Daisy said, feeling a little sick as her brain decided to let the idea of pain down to her left hand. The heel of it was howling, and her pinky felt on fire. John gently touched her wrist and sucked the air back through his teeth, his eyes wincing.
"You tore a nail off, right down in the quick."
"Son of a bitch,"
Will muttered.
"Will, listen to me,"
Marie said. She put a hand on Will's shoulder and held up her other finger by his face.
"Do not get into trouble. Capiche? I cannot replace you."
Will nodded without making eye contact. Marie twisted her mouth and looked over at John.
"Gianni, you go with,"
she said. Once out in the hall, Will had other ideas. "Ope, go down to the shops," he said. "Tell Fish to come up to the training room."
"It's all right," Daisy said. "He's busy. I don't need him to come up."
"I do,"
Will said. John crossed his arms.
Knock it off. I don't need a shadow. Go get Fish. Jesus Christ, he'll fucking kill me."
Will strode down the hall with Daisy in his arms, his jaw clenched tight, his face filled with rage and something else Daisy barely recognized as shame.
"It's not your fault," she said.
"It isn't?"
he said.
"He was looking at me. You ran and jumped, and he dropped his arms and kept looking straight at me the whole time. Motherfucker knew exactly what he was doing."
Her throat seized up in horror.
"Will, this has to stop,"
she said. His arms tightened around her.
"I know. I'll handle it, Daze. I promise."
Parting shot. When Eric appeared in the training room, he was out of breath and still wearing his safety goggles and gloves. But he knew what Daisy needed best in a crisis, and his expression was mild as he sat next to her. He didn't fuss or pat her, which she couldn't stand. She needed to think. She could only think when everyone held still. She slid her head against Eric's kiss and returned focus to her foot in its ice bath and the whiteboard of contingency plans piling up in her head. Lucky was brisk and neutral, speaking in the royal we. She wrapped a bit of gauze around Daisy's bleeding pinky nail, then bundled it up in ice. She draped a blanket around Daisy's shoulders, concerned about the chilled damp of sweaty practice clothes. Combined with the frigid waters around her foot, Daisy was starting to shiver.
"I want her in the ice another 10 minutes,
Max Tremaine, the head trainer, said.
"Then we can take her over to the health center to get it x-rayed. I don't think it's broken."
"Broken,"
Daisy thought.
"Worst case is broken,
Broken means I'm out. Sprained is at least 2 weeks. I have 4. But it's my left foot. I can dance with a weak left foot. I only need my right for the hard stuff. I can do this. I can do sprained.
I'll get the car,
Eric said, brushing his lips over Daisy's hair.
Be right back.
As he went out, he passed Will and his head gave a jerk toward the door.
The message was unmistakable. You. Outside.
John, who'd been lingering in the doorway, moved out of their way and came to sit next to Daisy. They sat in silence, both their heads slightly tilted, listening. Every other sentence in the hall reached Daisy's ears, but she got the gist of it. The tone of Eric's voice, tight and hard, pushed through the wall of his teeth. He was furious.
Fish, Will said. Don't fish me, Daisy's teeth chattered.
John reached and tugged the blanket higher up around her neck.
Messed up over you to the point of coming to rehearsal high and injuring my girlfriend. It starts to be my business.
John rested his forearms on his knees, fingers interlaced, thumbs tapping together.
I don't want him anywhere near her.